Blog Talk Radio.
Koda, Mojuba, Asheda, Mojuba, Aluwa, Mi, Apolabi, Pega, Mojuba, Araba, Mi, Adesanya, Awuyade, Mojuba, Ogute, Compound, Oje, Remo, Mojuba, Baba, Mojuba, Yeye, Mojuba, Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba, Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba, Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba, Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba, Egungun, to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe-o.
Ashe-o. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights, and New Power Radio Network. We began the UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict of July 2013, and we invite you to support and be a part of our Facebook pages and groups. You can hit me up on Facebook as Queen Tahira, of course, New Power Radio Network, and Sign of the Times. Also, please support our sponsors, Manhood Racing Culture, headed up by my co-host, Dr. James Jones. Please reach out to him on Facebook on Manhood, Race, and Culture, as well as the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com. Also, please support Unity Design, headed up by my beloved brother out of Detroit, Arlie Gordon. Please hit him up on Facebook as Arlie Gordon and the World Wide Web at unitydesign.com. And Unity is spelled UNITEE. And last but not least, the newest member of the Sign of the Times Due Power Radio Network family, AAESociety.org. Please hit them up on the World Wide Web at AAESociety.org. And my brother, Laquay Jewell, on Facebook as Laquay Jewell. Also, you can go to their Facebook page, the United States of Africa, and find out about the gathering. Check out the information that's there and see how you can be a part of the solution as AAE Society builds the treasury. So, of course, don't forget our brothers who are in the freedom struggle, Free Ohio Movement, the Free Alabama Movement, always doing good work, and we want to send as much positive energy as we possibly can to the Free Ohio Movement, Confined Citizens, and the Free Alabama Movement as they continue the strike that was started September 9th of 2016 in recognition of the inhumane treatment and, I guess, alienation of civil and human rights for the Attica prisoners. So the strike continues. There are still protests happening on a national level, and we continue to uplift our brothers behind the confined walls of a prison as they continue to make strides to simply be treated humanely and justly while they, quote-unquote, pay their debt to society, if you will. So always sending them positive energy. We love them very much and respect the work that they do. So tonight we have joining us author Edward Rene Hardin. I'm going to go ahead and bring Brother Rene into the conversation. Peace, Brother Rene. How are you doing this evening?
How are you doing? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
How are you doing? Okay.
Yes.
It's a pleasure to be able to call in and have a conversation with a few folks. As you say, my name is Edward Rene Hardin. I've been recently released from prison for maybe the past 4 months, 5 months, and I spent the last 43 years in prison. Went in when I was 17 years old. I'm now 62 years of age. What I want to share with those who are listening is that to have been out a very short time and to see society the way I'm looking at it today, it's really hardening. It's sad. It's ugly, it's wicked, and I wasn't expecting this after 40-some years of being locked away. I don't know, I just see a lot of, like I say, denial, wickedness. Let me share this with you guys, that for me, the only way I was able to get out of prison after 43 years, I had to come to the realization that I had to break away from the state of denial that I was living in for so long. And that's important. Because I see so much of it out here today, folks walking around in a state of denial. And, yes, I see the violence that is here, the gangs, the drugs. I see it all. But what I do see is that there are some folks out here really trying to band together as a group of people trying to do what is right, trying to make a positive difference. And that's uplifting. It really does uplift me in a lot of ways. I can say this, that after 43 years, 43 long, hard years, it has been a struggle. I know a whole lot of them brothers are still behind those walls, still struggling to set themselves free, you know. But me being here now, looking at what I see today, like I say, I'm taking it a day at a time. Can I say that? I'm just taking it a day at a time. I've been blessed to have come from behind those walls after the 43 years. And the only way I was able to do it, as I said just briefly, getting rid of the state of denial that I was living in. And I don't know, the only way I can see things improving out here is we must come together. We must. Because if we don't, we're all doomed. We're all doomed. not just Africans. I'm talking about all people of all races and colors. We must band mm-hmm. together, because if we don't, I see it and I feel it. And I've only been here a couple of months, and I can feel it. Sure, they're mm-hmm. gunning us down, but we're gunning more of us down. We're gunning each other down more than the police. When I look at the news, I could see where we would jump and shout and holler and scream and cuss and do everything else. Tear up our own community still in the name of seeing an officer, one of us, kill a young man, period. But yet we don't jump and shout and scream when we kill each other. Where's the marches at when we gun each other down, when we walk down the wrong side of the street or the wrong neighborhood? I don't see nothing about protesting that. I don't. I don't know. My thing here now, like I told a lot of the brothers before I got out of prison, was to come out here and now try to be a part of the solution. That's my goal today, is to be a part of the solution, not part of the problem. I think a lot of mm-hmm. folks can set up and talk about the problem all day long. But where's the solution? And when I say where's the solution, I'm talking about when will we put into effect, when will we put into action the solution? Everybody know what the problem is. Ask anybody walking around. They'll tell you exactly what the problem is. But how many folks are willing to step up to the plate and say, you know what, this is what I can do as an individual to try and bring a solution to some of the mess that's going on out here? Now, like mm-hmm. I said, I've only been a short period of time. And maybe there are a whole lot of good folks who are running around trying to be part of the solution. But down here in Los Angeles, California, where I'm at, I don't see a lot of that. I haven't seen it yet. And I think it's my duty, to stand up and say, you know what, let me speak out. Let me say something about it. And then let me get out, not just talk about it, but let me get out in the community and start talking and sharing with brothers and sisters, anybody who will listen, and say, hey, we must come together. We must come together. All races have to come together. If we're gonna finally tackle this problem, I'm talking about the race problem, the gang problem, the drug problem, we must band together. No ifs and buts about it. The police killings, we have to come together. That's the only solution that I can see so far that we have out here. Again, I can't stress it enough. You know, I've heard so many folks talk and share, say, a lot of things. But very few people I've been hearing say that the problem really, and a lot of folks don't want to hear this, lies within us. It really does. Mm-hmm. It really lies within us. As individuals, as communities, it lies within us. And I'm seeing it. I don't need nobody to tell it to me. I'm looking at it every single day that I've been down in Los Angeles. Until we, all of us, stand up and say, you know what, this is what I can do to try and make a difference, then a difference won't come. It won't come. I believe that in my heart.
Well, you've shared a lot, Brother Renee, in just a few minutes that we've been on the air. But I want to go back for a second because, you know, one of the things that I picked up on when you and I first started talking about doing tonight's broadcast is that this was a process for you. So tell us, you know, who is Renee and what is your inspiration to stay positive in life? And let's take the listeners back so they can get to know your inspirations are.
Renee is, well, let me say this. He was a young 17-year-old kid raised in South Central Los Angeles, California, made some very, very bad choices in his life, which caused him to take a life, an innocent life, which in turn caused me to be sent to prison. But 7 years to life. I was sentenced to what they call a 7-year sentence to life. I could have got out of prison in 7 years under good behavior. I went to prison a very angry young man, a very confused young man, a very racist young man. If you wasn't of my color, I didn't believe you deserved to live, to breathe. I really embraced that belief, took it to prison with me, got in prison, and I took 7 years sentence. Listen to me closely, and turned it into 43 straight years. I've been to some of the most hardcore prisons you can think of in California. Been to all of them. And along the way, I've met some very, very good brothers up in the prison who helped me to grow up very quickly. I had to grow up in prison very quickly. When you say the transformation did not come from me, it wasn't an easy process. It was, a process, and it took at least the first 30 years of my life in prison for me to finally say, you know what, it has to be something better for me than prison. It has to be. But I had to believe that it was something better for me before it could become a reality. Eventually, I started believing that it was something better for me outside of prison life. And the moment I started believing that, that's when I began to change how I saw myself, how I saw those around me, how I saw other people who did not look the same as me, how I began to look at the world, period, everything. I began to change and get rid of some of them old twisted beliefs that I had held on for so long. And a lot of folks say Michael Jackson, remember the song they call Man in the Mirror? That's a very powerful song that folks really, really look at it and listen to the words closely, Man in the Mirror, because that's what it comes down to, us looking at ourselves. And that's something I had to do. Just look at me. There was a lot of stuff in me I did not want to face because I didn't want nobody to know. That's what I say about the state of denial that I lived in for so long. I kept saying, no, I don't want nobody to know this about me. I don't want nobody to know that I was a thug, a criminal, a thief, a liar, a con man. I didn't want nobody to know none of those things. But I knew all those things were the wrong things to be. I knew that. But I embraced that lifestyle in such a way to where I said, you know what? There's nothing else for me but that particular lifestyle. Well, lo and behold, like I said, I came to the realization that it had to be something better than that lifestyle, because that lifestyle didn't give me nothing but prison for 43 years. And what I did, when I began to embrace that I could do something better for me as a man, as a black man, only then, and I'm going to say this, by the grace of God, because I believe that there's a God. It has to be, because I could not have done it by myself. God stepped into my life, and I'm telling you, he touched me in such a way to where I was able to take that look in the mirror and say, you know what? These are some things, Renee, you need to deal with. Whether you like it or not, I don't care how painful it is, because it wasn't easy, and some of the stuff was painful for me to face about me. Uh-huh. But the moment I started facing those things, let me tell you, it became much more easier for me to face it all. And when I began to do that, things began to happen. Meaning, my beliefs about things began to change. My belief about myself began to change. My belief about race began to change. I no longer looked at people based on the color of their skin. I looked at them based on what they was doing and how they was doing. As human beings, everybody. Where before, I wasn't able to do that. So when you say, tell you a little bit about me. Listen, escaped death row 3 times. Should have been dead and gone a long time ago. But by the grace of God and me making that 180-degree turn in my life, I'm telling you, God helped me save me. And I'm saying to anybody that might be listening to me, can't nobody save you but you. And I had to understand that. I had to come to that realization that can't nobody save me but me. Now, that may be a big pill for some folks to swallow, but we need to swallow that pill, because we're running here and there seeking everything and everybody else other than looking within for that so-called savior, because it's within. I found out that I'm the most powerfulest person walking around. You know why? Because I refuse to give away what God created. He created me. I have a choice. I make decisions whether or not I'm going to wake up today and be angry. I have a choice whether or not I'm going to wake up today and be happy. I make those decisions, not the police, not the prison system, not my mother, not my father, not my brother, no one. I have that power to decide how I'm going to live my life and how I'm going to go out here in society and live day by day. I have that choice today, and I refuse to give that's power. I refuse to give that away ever again in my life. You know, so again, I used to blame everything and everybody for all the choices that I make. But when I ran out of blaming folks, I ran out of blaming things, Then what was left? Me. I was the only thing standing there looking in that mirror and saying, Renee, now what? You didn't try everything. You didn't blame everybody. What's left? Me. I was the only thing left. That's when I began to make the transformation. When I looked in that mirror and said, hey, man, it's you. Now, are you willing to give it a go, meaning to give it a try? Because I'm going down an area where it was uncomfortable, and I'm going to use the word fearful. It was fearful for me to look at me because there's some stuff I did not want to see. I did not want to look at. Too ashamed of it. It was my own little secrets. Didn't want nobody to know. If I start looking at this stuff and start talking about this stuff, what are folks going to think about me? Well, I had to say to hell with what folks were going to think about me and worry about what I think about me. So when you say the transformation for me, and you remember, this was a process. It did not happen overnight. It was a long, hard process. And I can stand up today with my head held high that I am no longer that thug, that criminal, that liar, that cheater, that murderer, the con man. No longer those guys. That guy has been long died. I stand up today and let folks know that, hey, if you take a guy like me, and if he's not afraid to stand up and face himself, then the next man can do the same doggone thing I did and not keep ripping and running around looking to blame everything and everybody for why we won't do what we need to do for ourselves. So I don't know how else to put it. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm going to say just how I feel. When I look back over my life, you know, I say, damn, I've wasted 40-some years. But then there's another part of me that says, you know what, haven't really wasted it. And the reason I say that is because I take those last 40, 50-some years of my life and today use it as an example to motivate, to educate, to inspire, to uplift other folks. So those, all of them years wasn't wasted. In other words, I'm taking the positive. I'm taking my past and putting a twist on it, so to speak, to make something positive come out of it. I don't want my life, and I refuse to let it be in vain. And the only way I can do something about that is to talk about it, share it with other folks that may be going down the same path as I went down, and to let folks know that it is possible to make that transformation. Like I say, this is my first time ever coming on a radio station, sharing. I'm not nervous, not ashamed, because I'm telling you, I am at peace today. I have a sense of balance in my life today due to me not being afraid to take a look at me and to really address the things that I needed to address within me.
Well, I find your personal testimony to be quite inspiring because I think that you're right, that we do have a lot of healing to do in the community, and it's up to us to decide at what point we're going to allow the paradigm shift to happen. We're always presented with opportunities to change, and it's up to us to really recognize it. And with the grace and mercy of the Most High Creator, we're able to do that in our lives. So can you point to one particular incident or something that happened in your life that day that you can say that you noticed in yourself that you were starting to change?
I was sitting in what they call a prison called Folsom State Prison in Represa, California. I was sitting in an isolation cell. Had been in solitary confinement for the last 18 years. It's been approximately 18 straight years in solitary confinement. I sat up there one night all by myself and did all kind of praying because I was born and raised in the church. My family was church folks, and like I said, I was born and raised in the church. So I had some kind of sense of spiritual, or if you want, religion, into my life as a kid. But that particular night, I sat up in that cell, and believe it or not, thought about suicide, contemplated suicide. I said, damn, what else is there left for me? I'm so tired of living like this. I'm so tired of all of this. Maybe it's best that I just take on out of here. And I'm telling you, I don't know what hit me, but something hit me. When I laid down and closed my eyes, well, you know, and I fell asleep. Got up that morning with a brand new me, with a brand new attitude, saying to myself, you need to get off your butt and really do something about it. You really want to live, Renee. You really want to get out of prison. If you really want to have some kind of productive life like you say you want to have and like you deserve to have, then there are some things you must do, and you must begin to do it now. Well, the first thing I did was say, let me look at these beliefs that I've been carrying all my life about me, like I said, about other folks who do not look like me. Those are the first thing I had to do, was challenge these beliefs, these twisted beliefs that I had. And I began to do that, starting that morning. Now, again, I say the process wasn't easy. Because remember, I was afraid to let go, because I didn't know what I was going to replace it with. And that's the biggest fear a lot of us have, is letting go of that old twisted stuff for fear of what I'm going to replace it with, what they're going to replace it with. If you don't know what to replace it with, then more than likely you will continue to hold on to the garbage. You don't know how you're going to replace it. Replace it with something else. So for me, I had to say, well, what can I replace it with? Well, I learned that I can replace it with understanding, with love, having empathy in my heart, caring. Those are the things that I began to replace that hate with, that anger with, that resentment with. So when I start replacing that stuff, which, as I call it, the good stuff, you know, then I was on the right road. I began to hit on the right road. And as I began to change my attitude toward other folks, even though I was still in prison, believe it or not, even prison guards began to treat me differently. Now, I'm not saying everybody, no. But for the most part, if you treat yourself right, you treat other folks right, with respect, it will come back to you. Tenfold, it will come back to you. I was experiencing that. And when I began to experience that, I said, oh, my goodness, this is bad after all. This can work for me after all. If I just stay on course, not get sidetracked, worrying about what my so-called comrades are going to think of me, my so-called homeboy is going to think of me, if I don't let that sidetrack me, you know, then this might be able to work for you. Once and for all, this might work for you, Renee. Well, I held strong. Only by the grace of God, though. Like I say, I didn't do it alone. Only by the grace of God, I kept being strong. And each day, I got a little bit stronger. Each day, I became a little bit more nicer. Each day, I was able to say, hello, thank you. No, sir, yes, ma'am. So I was making the transformation. And I began to feel a little bit better about me. And that was the key for me, beginning to feel a little bit better about me. Not about nobody else, about me. Mm-hmm. And when I start feeling better about me, I'm telling you, that helped me to feel better about other people. People that I always hated, resented, blamed for everything that happened to me. No. So again, I say it was a long process. That was the beginning for me in terms of when I started the transformation in my life. And some folks said, I used to think that thinking about suicide was for the weak. Don't know real African, don't know real brother think about committing suicide. He got to be soft and weak. Well, that ain't true. There's a whole lot of us walking around wish we was dead. We just too afraid to commit it, to do it. But that's where I was at in my life at that point. And I thank God. I'm telling you, I thank God for stepping in. Because he was always there, just that I pushed him away. He'd always been there. But the moment I let him do what he needed to do, I'm telling you, my life began to change completely. Completely. And I'm thankful. I really am. I'm thankful and I'm blessed in a million ways.
I just want to remind the listeners, if you're listening on your phone, please push 1 if you have a question or a comment for Brother Renee. If you're listening on your computer, The number to dial in is 917-889-8059, 917-889-8059. I think we may have lost Brother Renee, so hold on a second. I'm going to give him a minute or two to call back in. Tomorrow night, we have the honor of having a publisher, as well as author, Willa Robinson, founder, visionary, and publisher at Knowledge Power Books. So please check out her website, www.knowledgepowerinc.com. She will be joining us tomorrow night. And then on Thursday night, we have Reverend Kenny Glasgow and Queen Dara from the Free Alabama Movement. And then Friday night, we have Brother Boris Franklin joining us live and in living color here on Sign of the Times to speak about hip-hop and its effect on the community and the effect that it could possibly have if we take it back to its roots, which is higher infinite power healing our people. So we're looking forward to the rest of this week's broadcast. And it looks like Brother Renee is back. I'm going to go ahead and open him up.
Yes.
Peace, Brother Renee.
I'm back. Yeah,
All right.
Remember, this is new to me. I just swiped the wrong thing on my phone and click, it went off on me. This is all new.
That's okay.
I use a simple phone. You hear me? A simple phone. Don't know how to use it.
Yeah. Well, don't
but
feel
I'm
bad.
Still
I still have to. That's right. I have to get advice from my children every now and then. I'm working my phone too, so don't feel bad. We've got a caller in queue. Would you like to take a caller now?
Okay. I'm okay with it.
All right. Hold on for 1 second.
Okay.
Last four digits, 3884. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with?
My name is Virginia Quarles. I am Renee's mother.
Welcome.
And Latif's mother. And I just want to say what I heard him saying today is God can do anything but fail. And he's speaking not only to the people out there, he's also speaking to his brother. Because we have to decide we want to make change in our lives. And he said some profound stuff. And it's what all young men need to hear, young men, women, boys, and girls need to hear what he said today, that it's not about anybody else other than ourselves. We choose to be, God is a God of choices, and we can choose to do good or bad. And he has made a transformation that only if you would have known him as a kid and know what he's going through now and the kind of man he has become, it's only a blessing. And I love you. I love him. I love Rant, Latif. And I just want you to know that God can do anything but fail. That's all I have to say. And I love you, Renee. God, you sound so good and so real.
I can hear you, Mama.
You sound so good, so real, so pure, so true. And God can only one can do it. When you look in that mirror and see you for who you are and you've made your mind up that this is what I'm going to be and what I'm going to do, it can be done. Not by everybody who makes that decision. I love you. I love you, Randy Latif, okay? I want to go now, Tahira. Thank you so much for allowing me to say what I say because I mean it from my heart. God has really made a change in that young man's life.
Well, hold on 1 second. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask you a quick question.
What's the question?
Because one of the things that we do is, you know, we support confined citizens across the nation. And you being the mother of someone who survived 43 years behind bars, how did you not give up hope? And what can you say to the mothers who may be going through what you've experienced in life?
My hope is in Jesus Christ. Nobody else has kept me through all of this, through ups and downs. That's my higher power. I have nobody to hold on, nobody. My strength, my everything, my inner, out, ups and downs is because of Jesus Christ, my Savior, who kept me all these years through everything, who's still keeping me through everything. That's what kept me. My belief in God, my church, my Bible, the Word of God, that's what kept me. And if anybody wants to be kept, if anybody wants to be kept, that's what you have to do. Because he can bring you through anything. There's no failure in him. Failure in man, failure in us, but there's no failure in God. So that's how I was kept. My strength in God, my belief in God, and my Word.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. Brother Renee, you got anything to say before?
Well, she know I love her. You know, she's been a big part of my life. She's been a big part of the changes that has taken place in my life. You know, and she's a support. She's a strong mother, but not just me, to my little brother. Latif. You know, I can't thank her enough. You know, she has been there through thick and thin when nobody else could be there. She's been there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a blessing within itself.
That's right.
So she know I love her. I love her.
I know. I believe it in my soul, I do. In my soul, I do. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you again for calling in. I'm going to put you back in the green room, and we appreciate you being a part of tonight's
dialogue. You're so welcome. I'm just glad I was able to hear him testify and tell where he's been, how he's going to make it, what he's went through, because he needs to be able to tell a lot of young men this. I mean, his story needs to be just spread abroad, because he's been there, went through it, and he's out. So he is not somebody can read about it. This man did it. Living example of what you can do if you make up your mind you want to do what's right. So I appreciate you letting me talk to Hera. I really do. Most of all, I'm so glad he's on, and I just hope that he can get on more stations, especially go to the schools and whatever else to talk to these young people, because they need somebody who's been there, who knows there's no plaything once you get in there, for sure.
Yeah. That's the truth. That's the truth. Mm-hmm. It's been looked at as a badge of honor for way too long. So thank you again. We appreciate
you. You're welcome. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right.
I love
we'll talk
you.
To you
soon. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. So, Brother Renee, I also want to thank Brother Latif for assisting with putting tonight together. He was persistent and consistent. I can say that about making sure that we connected, because he's very, very proud of you, Brother Renee, and he spoke very highly of you. And it's not often that we have the opportunity to share that type of energy amongst our family members. We don't do it half as much as we should. So it was quite an honor to be a part of this experience as well.
He is a blessing to me in more ways than one. Believe it or not, my brother Latif, which I know him as Randy, but he has been an inspiration to me. In spite of I'm a couple of years older than him, would you believe that I've always wanted to be just like him, and he was younger than me? Now, how crazy does that sound? Yes, because I knew he had it in him. I knew he wasn't going to take the path that I took. I saw it in him as a young kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank God he didn't take the path that I took. I give thanks and praise to God every day that he did not take the path I took. So, yes, he's inspired me in more ways than one. And he continues to do it every day. We speak every day. There's a day doesn't pass that we don't get on these phones and inspire each other and try to encourage each other. And we need more of that. Not just for me and my brother. We need it for a whole lot of us. To inspire each other, you know, to encourage each other. Yeah, I can see how difficult it is out here, how hard it is out here. I'm living it now. I see it. But I still believe in my heart that we can turn it around. I believe that. I refuse to believe anything else. I do. Because to believe anything else, then we must throw the towel in. We must throw it in. But we ain't that kind of people. We're not that kind of people to throw the towel in. Remember when I said I started to throw it in? But I'm telling you, something stepped into my life and wouldn't allow me to throw the towel in. You hear me? It wouldn't allow me to throw it in. But I believe the same thing for us out here. But we must, again, we must do this together. If we don't do it together, it ain't going to work. It won't work. We won't see the positive result that everybody keeps seeking and looking for. It will never come. Because we're too doggone divided. So I'm saying, hey.
Well, brother.
Talk to me. I'll talk back. Talk to me.
Well, when you speak of the 43 years that you were confined, your spirit was forever still free. When you decided to have the shift in thinking and doing and in your inner core and your spiritual beliefs, how did you stay positive in such a negative surrounding, and what How did you, you know, make sure that you did not lose that spark once you started it?
Because I associated myself with brothers who felt and feel the same way I did. You got to have a support system behind them walls. If you don't have that, you won't be able to make the transformation. You won't. But I was, again, I was blessed to be surrounded by some brothers who supported, who's to this day still sitting there supporting other brothers who are making positive changes in their lives to hopefully one day come out here and make a positive change out here. Believe it or not, you have a lot of good brothers, well, good men, period, behind them walls. Yes, we all went there for a reason. We violated the rules and things of society, and yes, deserved to go there. We deserved it. Deserved it. I'll be the first to admit that. But while there, you'd be surprised of how many folks who are behind these walls who have made the same transformation that I have made, but will never get an opportunity to do what I'm doing right now. We'll never get it. Mm-hmm. So I must let it be known. I have to speak up for them as well. I have to talk and let it be known that I'm not the only one. There's thousands of us still sitting behind walls who have made that change. Not the 360-degree change, because that's not making the change. That only takes you back to where you start. I'm talking about a 180-degree turn in their life. There are thousands of brothers behind the wall who have made that change in their life. And I surrounded myself around those types of brothers. They would encourage me, keep doing what you're doing, man. Stay on the right path, man. Don't get discouraged, man. You have something to give, Renee. So they kept inspiring me. And that's what kept me strong. And like I say, each day I got a little bit stronger and stronger and stronger. So where then, I didn't have to hear it no more. I had enough inside me to say, you know what, I'm all right now. I can do it myself. I can shake it off myself. I can shake the ugly looks off. I can shake the comments, the negative comments that some folks would make. Oh, man, you done got soft now. No, I done got soft. I done got smart now. I didn't get soft. I got smart. You know? And so, yeah, I thank a whole, and they all know who they are. I thank them so much for helping me help myself. To build up the courage and the strength to carry on. And look, lo and behold, look what it got me. It finally got me out of prison, where before I didn't think I'd ever get out. I had convinced myself that I was doomed to die in prison. I knew it had to be something better for me. And here it is. I knew it was. And I'm living it today. In spite of what I see out here, I still see the beauty in being out here as opposed to in prison. I don't take nothing for granted today in my life. Just the sound of hearing a dog bark means the world to me. Seeing some trees, smelling some fresh air means the world to me. So I take nothing for granted. And yes, I take it a day at a time. I ain't trying to rush nothing. But I know we in serious trouble as a people. I can see that. We in serious trouble. We need to hurry up. We ain't got time to take time. We don't. Not from what I'm seeing since I've been out here. We need to get on the ball. We need to get on the ball and really do something as a people. We do. But again, like I said 20 minutes ago, it cannot materialize if we don't band together, come together. But together, we can make it happen. I still believe in that. I really do.
Well, you talk about the difference in society from what you see in present day society and how we used to be. Talk about some of those changes that you see, and do you have any recommendations on how to, I guess, start the conversations that we need to have in order for the communal healing to start to take place?
I think there needs to, what we call in prison, we used to say, let's go to the round table. And I know, I don't know what to call it out here in society, but in prison we would call it the round table. Let's go to the round table with some level-headed folks. With some level-headed folks. Notice I keep saying level-headed folks who want to see something good happen. And sit down and really, like I say, have a dialogue. But once the dialogue is over with, What's the solution? What can we do? What can we come up with at the roundtable that we can walk out that room or that conference room and go back to my apartment, to my house, or in my neighborhood and say, this is what I can do, start it right now to try and make a difference. Now, I know a lot of folks got to work and survive and do all that. I'm learning how to do that now myself. You know, it's how to survive and take care of me. But at the same time, I have to be able to say, you know what, let me take a step back and say, what can I do right here on the block I live on? What can I do to try and make a difference on the block I live on? And that's, for me, is to get out. And whoever I see, and I know some folks ain't going to want to hear it. I ain't got time for that. I got to go to work. I got to do this. I got to do that. But I'm still going to let them hear it. And they feel like they got time for it or not, because it needs to be told that we can improve the block I'm on. We can improve the block you on. We can if we take the initiative to get out. And I say, start having the dialogue about what needs to be done. I don't really know what has to be done because I've been gone for so long. But I know something has to happen. It cannot stay the way it is. It cannot stay the way it is. I don't know about no other state in town, but down here in Los Angeles, California, it can't stay like this. They just killed two more brothers the other day here. Yes. But when I see that, the first thing I ask myself is, what part did my brother play in his own death? Now, I know a lot of folks don't want to hear that. But we have to ask, be open and honest with ourselves and ask ourselves the question, what part do we play in a lot of the ugliness and wickedness that's being put upon us, be it the hands of law enforcement or whoever? What part are we playing? Because if you really tear it apart and really look at it, we play a part. We play a part in it. Now, like I say, some folks don't want to hear that. But until we begin to really say, you know what, let's put all the cards on the table. All of it. Then let's take a good look at it then and see what we come up with then in terms of how can we combat some of this stuff. Yes, and we this is an old saying amongst us. It starts at home. And some will make the argument with Renee. We don't have that family structure anymore. You've been shown, brother, ain't no more of that out here no more. I refuse to believe there ain't no more of that period out here. And then you say, well, where can we begin? Look what you're doing. On this talk radio, you imagine how many listeners you have who are listening to us right now. But when they get done listening, hang up the phone or turn their radios off, what will they go and do in their own community, down the street, across the street? What will they do? What part will they play? But we ought to be tired of setting that time out. Oh, it's like this and it's like that. And you can't do this and you can't do that. We ought to be tired of saying that stuff. We should be tired of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've lost you again. Okay, I didn't lose you. I'm still here. I thought I'd
put
the phone again.
No, I'm here.
But I'm being honest with you. I don't really know. I don't have all the answers. I would never proclaim that I do. I don't. I am a baby at this stuff, but I do know one thing. That it is possible. It can happen. We can uplift the quality of our lives. I believe that. I'm not just giving you a bunch of hogwash talk. We can do this, but there's some things we got to do for us. Plain and simple. There's some things we got to do for us.
I saw
a store, black-owned store, and I asked the person, I said, listen, I don't see nobody go up in the brother's store. The little supermarket on the corner. I said, why nobody goes up in the brother's store? Oh, Renee, you know how it is, man. He probably bought all his shit hot. It probably ain't no good. It's probably secondhand shit. I said, why would you think that? Why we mistrust and distrust and think that everything that has to do with us, it has to be in a criminal sense? Somehow you make your brother be a criminal and don't even know it. But he has a store on the corner here. Brothers refuse to go in the store and buy something from him. But you'll go across town and pay twice the money for the same thing you go in that store and buy from the brother. And in the process, you're supporting our community when you buy from each other. But the mistrust, the self-hate is so deep that it's like, wow, this is what's been going on for 43 years I've been away, that the mistrust and the self-hate is so strong that we can't say brother half of the time to each other. I used to tell brothers, the first thing we say when we see each other is, where you from? Instead of saying, how you doing? I can't relate to that. I can't identify with that. I have never been able to identify with that. Like I'm telling you, whoever's may be listening, I don't know what else to do. I don't, other than to go out and to be a voice and to share and say, hey, we can do something. Now, help me figure out, let's sit down at that round table and help me figure out what it is that we can do, and then let's go out and do it. Because I know in doing things, sometimes we got to make sacrifices that a lot of other things are willing to make. There's some sacrifices that's got to be made in order to get this stuff right, once and for all, through all people,
mm-hmm.
not just African American. I ain't just talking about the black community now. All of us. It's important that we include everybody, because it's affecting everybody. I'm seeing this. I'm seeing it. No, I wasn't out here for the so-called the drugs and the gangs getting out of control. I wasn't out here for all of that. But I'm telling you, I believe in my heart that before you start using the drugs, there was something going on inside your life before you even picked up a bag of dope or a crack cocaine pipe or smoked some weed or that bottle of alcohol. There's some other stuff going on inside your life. So I don't buy that it was the drugs. It was I don't mind that, because there had to be something going on for you to even want to pick those things up in the first place. So I feel
mm-hmm.
the problem goes deep, and it goes deeper than just the drugs or the alcohol. I believe that, and I don't know. Maybe, like I say, I'm new out here. I'm trying to better understand, you know, what it is that we can do. We already, like I said, already see what the problem is. I already see it. I saw that within the first 2 months I've been. What I'm interested in is trying to find folks who can help me, help us bring about the solution to the problem that we see and live every day out here.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the folks I'm interested in talking with, the folks who have the solution. Because like I said, everybody can tell you what's wrong. I haven't met not one person yet since I've been home. They could not tell me what's wrong. But I haven't met five people who could tell me this is what we should do today to try to combat some of this ugliness out here. I haven't met five people. And that's bad.
Well,
that's
by
sad.
The end of this, well, by the end of this conversation, you will have met five people at least that believe as you believe. Because that's one of the things, Brother Renee, that has kept us on the air despite times getting hard and struggling to keep the broadcast paid for and the internet on and the cell phone bill paid, is that's been our biggest inspiration, is that we stay inspired by the fact that we know that we're destined for greatness, and that these things that we've been through, even the 43 years that you were behind bars, were steps in that process. And so I can't tell you how much I appreciate the manifestation of today's conversation, because it definitely is inspiring, and we're knee-deep in it with the freedom struggle. We're knee-deep in it on the outside and the inside, and trying to stay positive in such a negative world is not always easy. And, you know, you're right when you say about it's a lot easier to point the finger and say, well, it was the Willie Lynch syndrome, or it was, you know, the 13th Amendment that allowed slavery to happen legally, and they're making all this money off of our free labor. You're absolutely right when you say that it's up to us to make that shift, paradigm shift happen, and things will start to manifest themselves that show that there's a higher power acknowledging the changes that we're making in our lives. So, you're right. We have been a people who have survived and been able to tell many a story of a struggle, but yet The victory stories are even more inspiring, and we need those in place to in order for us to move to the next level. So we're at the top of the hour. We're going to take a quick break, Brother Renee. You can grab something to drink. We'll be back in about 2 minutes, maybe 3 minutes at the most. You're listening to Sign of the Times, brought to you by the UAC
okay.
and New Power Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Yeah. Listen to the lyrics.
Here we go.
We are the ones prophesied to return. My main concern is for all of you to learn how to live. Yes, through the lyrics I give and send, my friend, this age is coming to an end. Not the world, but the age is ending. Ending. Listen to the astrological message I'm sending. I'm sending. Truth is truth, whether or not you like me. We are living now in the age of Pisces. But Pisces is over at the year 2000.
Ooh.
When the Son of God changes his house and enters the age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
The Son of God as man is hilarious.
Okay.
When you think of Jesus, think of the sun. The flaming sun. That's where they stole this concept from. Stop believing and read your Bible logically.
Yeah.
The New Testament is really old astrology. Jesus is the Son of God, no lie. But they might be talking about the sun up in the sky. The sun that hangs on the cross of the zodiac. The zodiac with 12 signs to be exact.
Yeah.
Each sign is a house, and you should keep in mind each house equals a period of time.
Hey.
The time, 2,000 years, and that's a fact. It's called an age or a house in the zodiac. The 12 disciples are 12 months of reason. The four gospels signify the four seasons. When Jesus fed the multitude with two fishes, it signified the age of Pisces, not fish on dishes. If you read the Bible astrologically, it's clearer.
Yeah.
The next age will be the age of the water bearer. It's called the age of Aquarius,
word.
When logic and truth will take care of us.
Such
is this age of spiritual dignity. You'll see a rise in femininity and creativity. That's what masculinity. You got to get with me. This is your true her story. Do you want to go higher?
Put this on YouTube.
Yeah.
You heard this, dude.
Brother, sister, got to.
I believe our greatest need as a people is to educate our youth. I believe that we need to move from all of the individuals and groups who are doing great things in their communities to uplift kids through better education, but we need to move from fragmentation to consolidation to coalition. They are simply products that help to create awareness.
Anytime you can put a symbol on a t-shirt that symbolizes unity, that's what we're doing.
Something for people to rally around. I use the colors of red, black, and green to reconnect African American youth with their culture. How do you know where you're going if you don't know where you've been and what you've been through as a people? At best, we are strongest together. And in that sense, I am driven and passionate about talking to as many people and groups all over this country who, again, want to help to maximize the mission, want to help to move forward our kids with better educational opportunities.
Welcome back to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Tonight's guest is author Renee Hardin. And Brother Renee, welcome back.
Well, I'm here. I'm still here with you.
All right. Now let's talk about the book. Now the title of the book is The Forgotten Child. Please talk about the book. What inspired you to start writing, and where did that title come from?
Well, the title came from I felt like I had been forgotten as a youngster growing up. I came from a family of seven. The middle child, and I always felt like I was treated different. You know, I felt different growing up in a large family. And I don't know, once I reached my teenage years and, like I said, got into trouble based on the choices that I made, went to prison, and it seemed like everyone had forgotten about me, had passed me away. and that's where I came up with the idea about the forgotten child. That's where it came from. But what inspired me most to begin to write the book was I have a son who I'm now beginning to try and have some type of relationship with. I left when he was only 9 months old. My son today is 44 years old, in trouble with the law, went to college, graduated as an engineer. And so I wanted to tell the story to let him know who is dad, who is father, was and is. Because I felt like one day if I don't make it out of prison, well, at least I can leave him this book. So he can sit down and say, you know what, this is who my father was. This is who he was trying to become. You know, and again, he was the only one who inspired me to write the book. So I don't know, you know, I'm glad. I put it this way, I'm happy that he was an inspiration for me in writing the book. It took me 8 years to write the book. But I have no regrets. Like I say, I'm spending time with him now, building a relationship with him. And it's wonderful. It really is. Even though he's a full-grown man, he's 44 years old, you know. But it's a wonderful feeling to be in his life and to have him in my life. And like I tell my son, I number one, I let him know that I'm sorry for failing him, for letting him down. But more importantly, I'm sorry for letting myself down, see? But again, we've gotten past that, and things are good today. Like I said, I've only been out a very short period of time, but so far things are good. Couldn't be any better in terms of my relationship with my son today. But yes, he was the key point in terms of inspiration for me writing the book. It was my son, and it still is my son.
How did you go about, I guess, initiating the relationship and that healing process? What has that been like, considering you were away for so long?
Well, when we finally met face to face, it was an emotional gathering. I could feel the hurt, the anger, the frustration in myself towards me. I felt all of it when I embraced him and gave him a hug for the first time. But I sat him down. I told him this. I said, you know what? If you want to say whatever you want to say to me, it's okay, because I deserved all of that. Whatever he was feeling and felt today, it's okay for him to say it to me, because I did let him down. I failed him. I really did. But I like I told him, I thank him for not letting it affect him in such a way to where it would disrupt his life and what he wanted to do in his own life. But yes, it was very emotional, and I think how you said, medicine. It was a medicine for both of us, because it has begun to help him and I really heal. Father and a son. It has helped us to heal. And I love that. You know, my son wasn't, you know, some folks say they have a child, it was an accident. My son wasn't an accident. Me and his mother planned to have him. I wanted a son. And at a very young age, at the age of 16, yes, I wanted a son. Thinking that I can replace something that I felt was missing in my own young life, not knowing that I wasn't even ready in no shape, form, or fashion to have a child at that time. But anyway, he means everything to me, everything. And it means everything for him and I to continue to push forward and strengthen our relationship today. And that's what we do, you know. Again, and I'm grateful.
Well,
I'm very, very grateful. Go ahead.
What advice would you have for a father who may be afraid to initiate that conversation with their sons and daughters, because they've been out of their lives up until, you know, a certain point, what would you say to them to help them have the courage to do what you did?
Number one, I would say stop being afraid of themselves. Because the moment you stop being afraid of self, then you won't be afraid to sit down and have that kind of conversation with your son or with your daughter. All it is your own fear of what he or she may say in return to you when you reach out to them. Nobody wants to feel that rejection of, you know, that anger or that hurt. Nobody wants to feel that, especially a father. But still, you must take it. For me, I took the chance and said, whatever he says out of his mouth to me, I'm willing to accept it. I'm willing to accept that. I owe him that much to be able to say, you know what, I can accept whatever he says. Even though I'm there, and some of the things he told me, didn't like it. But so what? I was able, let me say this, today I have the emotional tools to get past it. And that was key for me, is having the emotional tools to say, you know what, Renee, you got to be strong enough and big enough to get past all of that stuff he may say to you. Because a lot of times we fix it in our own minds, thinking and believing what somebody's going to say. And really, it don't be what you've been thinking and feeling and believing. They don't end up saying those things. Half the stuff I thought my son would say, he did not say those things. So I say for those who are reluctant or hesitant to try and reach back out to their children, stop being afraid. Stop being afraid. And there are some children, who, if you reach out, they're going to cuss you out, call you every name in the book. And for the most part, let's be honest, got it coming. We deserve it because he wasn't there for them. He wasn't. And I say this even to my own. I have an older sister who has a daughter who was flung out on crack cocaine today. And I told my sister this just about a week ago. I say, listen, you can't blame so much her for her use of crack cocaine. Why don't we stop and take a look at what part you played in her feeling like she a need to turn to crack cocaine? That's because there's a part. And lo and behold, I found out that my sister used to get high in front of her. My old sister used to get high in front of her daughter. So how can you now, because you don't get high no more, and your daughter's strung out on drugs, how can you now judge her in a harsh way, in an ugly way? How can you now do that? Doesn't work. But yet you have not once sit down with her and say, let me talk to you. First, let me use myself as an example as to why I began to get high. What drove me to smoking crack cocaine? That's what my sister needed to do and should do, which she hasn't done to this day. But I believe that if we don't, you got to be honest with your children. That's all I ever wanted as a youngster myself, is some honesty, some nurturing. Well, if you don't give them that, then what do we expect? This is what we see in the day as the end result of not giving those things to our children. The nurturing and then being honest and upfront. Those kids know when you're full of it. They know when you are full of it. They know.
They sure do.
They know. For sure. Don't sell them short. They know. And again, I say to those who are struggling with that, stand up and be counted for them. What I mean by that, stand up and stop being afraid of you, because if you stop being afraid of you, you will take a chance and say, you know what, even though it may not turn out the way I want it to turn out, I owe that to my daughter. I owe that to my son. I owe that to my mother. I owe that to my grandmother. I owe that to my brother, to my sister. And that's how I deal with life today. That's how I deal with folks today, including family members. That's how I deal with folks. I refuse to deal with it any other kind of way. And so far, it works for me. It's working. And I guarantee it'll work for the next person. I ain't no different than the next person. It'll work. Just stop being afraid.
You know, Brother Renee, as it relates back to the title of the book, The Forgotten Child, I'm sure that as you describe your niece, she's felt the same way as a forgotten child. I can identify certain points in my life where we've all probably had points where we felt like the forgotten child, and finding inspiration in that is phenomenal, Brother Rene.
Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you. I mean, but hey, let me say this. I don't believe, because we all have a story. Every last single one of us have a story. What matters is what you do with the story. I've learned something along the way. I've never used drugs before in my life. I've never used alcohol before in my life. Contrary to the popular belief that, because you're from South Central Los Angeles, African American and male, you had to have used drugs or alcohol before. Untrue. That's the stereotype that they put on us. I've never used those things before. However, though, you know, I truly believe that, I don't know, the only way I can keep, this is for me, this is for nobody else but for me, the only way I can keep what I have become today, is by giving it back. You've got to give it away. You can't have what I have and hold on to it and think it's going to be okay. That's the purpose and reason for me talking on this show right here with you tonight. It's giving it away. I'm in a form right now. This is just a form of me giving it away. It helps me more than anybody. It's helping me to stay focused, to stay on the path that I'm on. This does it for me. So again, whoever listens, you got to give it away. If you have it, you have to give it away. That's the only way you can keep it. That's the only way you can get better and be a better human being, is by giving it away. I learned that in an NA meeting. You should look down on folks who went to NA, Narcotics Anonymous. I ain't never used no drugs. What I'm doing going up in one of them places? Well, lo and behold, I went up in there one day and sat down and started to listen to what they was really talking about. One of the 12 steps that they talk about is the only way you can keep what you have is by giving it away. That made all the sense to me in the world. And that's what I choose to do with the rest of my life, is to give it away. That's the only way I can keep what I have today in my life. And what I have today is a peace of mind. I got a sense of balance. That means everything to me. Not walking around mad no more. Not walking around full of resentment no more. You hear me? Not walking around carrying a chip on my shoulder as though the world owed me something. World owed me a damn thing. I owe me. Yeah. If folks could see me at this moment, I'm standing outside on a sidewalk. You hear me? Listening to the wind, which is so important. It means the world to me. Just to feel the wind blowing. Watching cars fly by now. Man, this is such a wonderful to be able to do this in my life and really have it mean something to me today. That's why I value all the small things today. I really do. So I'm okay. Like I say, that sense of peace, I have it today in my life. That balance, I have it today in my life. And I want to let folks know they can have it too. I ain't no special kind of guy. I'm just like everybody else. In some cases, worse. Remember what I once was. You hear me? Remember what I once was. But I can stand up here today and tell you, ain't none of that no more. I'm not here no more. Huh. Got my chest poked out now, standing up on this corner, saying to myself, look at today. Never thought I'd be standing up here talking to somebody on a talk radio station, telling my story, trying to inspire somebody, trying to encourage somebody that if old boy like Renee can do that, so can I. I think I can do it too.
That's right.
That's all I'm trying to do today. That's all I'm trying to do today. That's what I'm about today. That's what gives me joy. To do what I'm doing right now at this moment with you on this radio.
Well, we definitely are inspired by your story, Brother Rene. I want to talk a little bit more about the writing process before we get ready to let you go for the evening. When you decided that you wanted to become an author, how did you start that process? And do you have any advice for anyone who may be thinking about writing or publishing something? What advice would you give to them?
The only thing I can tell someone is that for me, again, my son inspired me to begin to write. I was sitting up in a cell in isolation, and whatever piece of paper I could get my hands on, sometimes toilet tissue, I just started writing down what I was thinking and what I was feeling, taking a look at my life, saying, you know what, let me write about it so I can hopefully one day share it with my son so that he can see who his father was. So I don't really know what to tell the next guy that who may be thinking about them. But if you're thinking about it, then do it. And sometimes, for me, it was very painful because you stir up all that stuff that was deep down inside you. All that comes back up. That's why I say it took me 8 years to write the book, because I kept coming into things concerning me that I hadn't fully dealt with yet. And so I would write today, and before you know it, I wouldn't write no more for 4 days. Then I'd write a little bit more on the fifth day. And I said, no, I don't feel like getting emotional today. I don't feel like crying today. I don't feel like feeling sorry for myself today. So I wouldn't write that day. Then I'd wait a couple of days past, but I feel like I'm a little bit emotional strong. Then I'd write a little bit more. Before I knew it, 8 years later, I had a book. But from, again, my son and the fact that when I got halfway through the book, then I just said, maybe I could make a difference, man. Maybe it can go beyond my son. Maybe I could have a whole lot of sons and daughters read this story and inspire them. That's when I started thinking about maybe I can help some folks. And maybe that is a good way, too, Renee, of giving back, is to tell the story so that someone can say, you know what, again, that old guy like Renee could do it, so can I. That's what got me to doing it. That's what kept me on that path, even though it took 8 years. Because I refused to give up on it. I said, you know, hey, I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to quit now. Even though it was painful. There was times it was painful. There was times it was funny. A lot of shame, guilt, all of that stuff. But again, I refuse to give up. So I say to anybody who's thinking about doing it, you got to deal with some of that shame, that hurt, that pain, all that stuff. The good, the bad, and the ugly. You willing to deal with that? You can tell your story. But in telling the story, you have to be open and honest. Number one, with self. And that's where for me, it was a no-brainer for me. Because I said, you know what, I'm tired of lying to me. I'm tired of lying to me. And so, like I said, when I made up my mind that I wasn't going to lie to myself no more, things began to open up. When I say open up, me, I began to open up and pull all the skeletons out of my closet and took a little look at it. And said, okay, I don't need none of this stuff no more. I ain't carrying this stuff with me no more. I'm tired of carrying all that ugliness. That's when it begins. And like I said, I don't really know what else to tell anyone else other than my story, how it happened for me. And we all are different in our own ways. We all are different, you know. And as a man, I know we sometimes some of the hardest folks to say, you know what, I want to tell this story and not have to worry about being judged, because we worry about being judged. Because I did it first. I was concerned about, man, if I tell the story, if I open myself up, meaning my life, and be totally honest about it, I'm going to be judged, you know. And I may be judged in an ugly way. Well, I had to stop worrying about it. Stop worrying about being judged. Because folks don't believe what they want to believe no matter what you say or what you do. And I accept that.
That's right.
That's how it goes. And I'm okay with that. But see, when I became okay with that, it made it easier for me to continue with the book. And so whoever's talking about doing writing a book about their lives. I'm just telling their story, period. You got to be okay with some folks ain't going to like what you say or how you say it. And you got to be okay with that. If you can come to that point in your life and be okay with it, then you need to go on and write your story, tell your story, because you never know who your story can help. If you're about trying to help folks, then you need to tell the story. You need to tell it. Because I've heard too many of our youngsters look up to us in prison. That's crazy. That's crazy. When you got a youngster looking up to a guy in prison, they call us the OGs. I don't know why. I don't know why. They need to stop calling us OGs and looking up to guys in prison. Because the guy in prison is not someone that the average shucks out here should be looking up to. And I'm saying that should come from us. Those of us who are still in prison, those who have just got out of prison, up in the prison, we should be trying to school youngsters that that's the last thing you should be looking up to is a brother that's in prison on his way to prison. That is not a badge of honor. It has never been. But we have taken it and made it a badge of honor. That's how messed up we are. Well, we have made going to prison and being in prison a badge of honor. But yet we say we want to see something different with our youth. How can we expect something different, but yet we make them think that it's okay to go to prison? Doesn't add up. Doesn't add up. It has never been okay, and it never will be okay. Prisons are filled with us. Old middle age, they're filled with us. Just the other day, I asked somebody, where's all the men at out here? And she looked at me and said, in prison, Renee. I said, I used to hear that a lot of years in prison. I didn't believe that. Now I'm seeing it. Like, damn, where are we? Where are we at out here? Then the few that's out here, you know, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. I really don't. Remember, there's a lot that I don't know. I'm still trying to figure some of this stuff out. And I don't know if I ever figure it out. And I'm okay with that, too. I'm okay with it. Because everything is not meant for me to figure out. Everything is not meant for me to figure it out. I just need to do my part. If I just continue to do my part, then I'm okay. I'm okay with it. I'm all right with it. So I don't know. I hope I answered the question, you know.
Yes, sir. You definitely did. And we appreciate you and the time that you took to be a part of tonight's conversation. When will the book be published? And talk a little bit about the publisher that's helping you achieve your goal.
Well, she will be on your show, I believe, tomorrow night, Willa Robinson.
Yes.
She is a wonderful person. And she reached out to me through my brother Latif and said, you know, let's sit down. I want to meet this guy, Renee, and hear his story. We met, sat down. I told her my story, and she said, you know what? I'm willing to step out here on this limb and help you, Renee, tell the story because it needs to be told. People need to hear this story. So she, how you can say, is a blessing. A blessing sent to me, Willa Robinson. And so far, there is going to be a series of books. Three books will be published. The Forgotten Child is the first one that will come out. And from what I was told this morning, within the next 90 days, the first book should be out, you know. But I think Miss Willa Robinson will be able to tell you more about it, you know, because she is the one who is handling everything. Because I don't know the first thing about publishing it, you know.
Yes, I'm looking forward to having Ms. Willa on with us tomorrow because I myself have thought about becoming an author, and she was in all the conversations that we've had so far, she's been very open, willing to share information, willing to share her experience and her knowledge. So please feel free to call in tomorrow night too, Brother Renee, if you can.
I will. I'm going to call in when she's supposed to be on. She's been a blessing to me. In more ways than one. She really has. She has a niece named Sandra. They work hand in hand. And to both of them, For me, they are a blessing sent from God. I'm telling you. And I can't speak enough about them, you know. They have become my sister and my third mother. That's how I told her. She has become my third mother. You know? And Sandra is my sister, my baby sister. But, yes, Dave,
that's all right.
Done so much in such a short period of time that I've been out here. It's I can't even put words to it. I can't even describe it, you know. But I'm thankful and I'm grateful, you know, for them, you know. But that's
what
we're going to have to speak to, you know, in terms of where the book is at, where we're at now, you know, with actually having the book published and put out.
All right, we've got a caller in queue. I'm going to go ahead and open 0308, last four digits, 0308. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with? Last four digits, 0308. Do you have a question or a comment?
Willa Robinson. Can you hear me? This is Willa Robinson.
That's Willa.
Hey, Miss Willa. Welcome.
I've been listening to the whole program, and I just want to say that I thank you, Renee, for sharing and being so transparent with your transformation. We're so excited about you, about your book, and we just can't wait to get into it and really dig deep and the public something that we feel is really going to be helpful to our, especially our young people. This is a story that needs to be told, and it is going to help millions of people. So I'm just so thrilled. I can't thank Latif enough for setting this all up, but, you know, God orders our footsteps, and he knows exactly what we should be doing, and I'm so honored and I'm so privileged to have the opportunity to be working with you, Renee, and it's just a blessing for me, and I'm just humble, I'm grateful, and I just know it's going to be a bestseller.
I appreciate hearing that. I told you, you became my third mother. That's why I just got to tell
her. I accept that.
You know, yeah. Man, it's good to hear your voice.
Same here. And I'm excited about tomorrow night as well.
Oh, I'm going to tune in. I need to hear it.
Okay.
Yes, I'm excited about it as well. And I think it's going to offer inspiration to people who are listening who may not think that they have what it takes to put together a manuscript or a writing. But like Brother Renee said, all you have to do is just do it. Just start writing, and you'd be surprised where your inspiration may come from.
That is so true. And that's like Renee said earlier, we all have a story. And if you don't tell the story, you really don't know who you can bless with your story. So it's good to get it out there. Sometimes it's just meant for you to get it out. Sometimes it's to help others, but you need to get it out. So that's what we do, and we're excited about it, and we love what we do. I have the opportunity of having my niece, Sandra Slayton. She is our literary director, and she has a love for what we're doing. And so it just worked out that I had been, you know, wanting someone to help me and with this business, and there she was right there. So I'm just thrilled and excited about all that we're going to do. God is just really tremendously blessing this business. So we're very honored and fortunate and blessed to be doing what we do.
Well, hopefully this is the beginning of better and greater things to come for all of us. Things do manifest themselves when you put the right energies and inspirations together, and the Most High God has your back. So I appreciate you all for being a part of tonight's conversation. I also want to send a special shout-out to Brother Latif, America's Best Classic Entertainment Group, California Coolin, Carolina Coolin, and B.I.G. Farouk Black Suit Music Group. Thank you, Brother Lateef, for all you do to make the world a better place. Thank you, Brother Renee, for being such an inspiration. And thank you, Miss Willa. And we're looking forward to seeing you all again tomorrow night here on Sign of the Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right.
Go ahead, Willa.
Till tomorrow, everyone.
Okay.
Okay. Take care. God bless.
All right, then. Thank you. Bye.
Tomorrow night, everybody. 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Sign of the Times. We love you. We thank you. And most of all, we appreciate you for being a part of tonight's conversation where we work on the solutions and help unite the community. So we'll see you all tomorrow night at 6. Bye.